AAC meeting, December 5th, 2016.
I'm Howard Crawford from Silver Spring, Maryland, and with the Council of Governors, Access for All.
Philippe Lizelle, Washington, D.C.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Steve Kappa, Washington, D.C.
Larry Hill, Silver Spring, Maryland.
Folsom LaPorte, D.C. County, Capitol Heights, Maryland, Texas, and I'm a teacher.
Captain Davenport, Capitol Heights.
Joe Kozner, Arlington, Virginia.
Gilbert Arisa-Silva, Washington, D.C.
Hello, everyone. So this is Sonia Parker from Washington, D.C. Happy to be back.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, we will review and approve the agenda for today.
Madam Chair, this is B. Could you speak in your outside voice so that everyone can hear you, please?
Okay, thank you. I want to add new business about the board meeting that was last week, if possible, from Mr. Phil, and talk about the ability to provide an update if possible. Those are two things I would like to add to the agenda.
I'd like to know what's the availability for the ride, the pickup in the river museum.
Oh, what was this? Awesome. Try to discuss that also, speak up.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are three items we'd like to talk about added to the agenda.
I move adoption with the three items added.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those that oppose?
One-handed, then.
Yes, could we add to the agenda also the meeting that was held last Thursday?
That's what we're going
to do. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Thank you. So the ayes have it. Now review of the minutes of the prior meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Abstentions? Now the board report. Do we have a motion to approve the board report?
I move we approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
didn't get very many ayes.
Aye.
Those opposed, so it's been accepted. Now we're going to have a public comment period. Is anyone here? If there's anyone who has not, have their name on the list and would like to speak, raise your hand. Does everybody have a list?
Ms. B said.
I'm sorry, Ms. B said that there are two people on the public comment period, Ms. So I'm going to move on with these two folks. The first person is Ms. Sandra. Please, if you are ready to share with us your comment.
Good evening, my name is Sandra Sermons. I had a very unfortunate situation last Tuesday. Driver picked me up, we provided door to door, she assisted me boarding. And about 2 minutes into the ride, she pulls over and says she's refusing to transport me because she doesn't like my perfume. And furthermore, I have to call and get myself another ride. Now, I have been a customer of Metro Access for some years, but I have never in my life had a request like that. So I call and convey that to the dispatcher, who was equally as shocked. Long story short, I was 3.5 hours late to work. And that's just, it's past inexcusable. I'm not sure whether she got up on the wrong side of the bed or she just didn't like me, but as I told both her and the road supervisor, you guys are on the clock. Your salaries are being paid, but you're precluding my getting to work in a timely fashion. There was no compassion from the road supervisor, no nothing. Like, okay, well, it happened and it is what it is. No, it didn't just happen, and no, it's not just what it is. I am a human being, I'm a taxpayer, I'm a customer, I'm a consumer. And whatever else is true, I don't deserve anywhere near the type of treatment that I received last Tuesday.
I can answer that question. This is John Gray with MV. Ms. Sermons, I do greatly apologize for the situation. That should never have happened. It was brought to her attention by the dispatcher at the time, and the driver was informed that they had to transport you. Unfortunately, we could not get the driver to do so. We had to send out a road supervisor to the scene and try to sort out the situation. In that instance, the driver was absolutely wrong. And what we tried to do was send someone out there to alleviate the situation and also to try to get the ride as quickly as possible. But I do apologize for the delay that it caused me.
I have a question. Was appropriate action taken in regards to the driver?
That I am not sure of yet, but I can definitely follow up with the provider involved.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
Along that line, I would hope that the rider did not pay for that ride and is getting credit for another ride to make up for all the time she lost at work.
Okay. That will be taken care of.
Madam Chair, I don't see any other hands, and the other person from the public comment decides to wait a little bit longer for any intervention related with the budget, so she will participate at that moment. So nevertheless, I do have a public comment, not personally, but from a family that was riding Metro Access, so I would like to share that at this moment. This was last Monday. This day, this Spanish speaker young man with his mother arriving together to an appointment, and they were picked up at 11 a.m. from their house, going to 12:15 appointment, and they were taken to a different way to Orleans, Maryland. The bottom line is that there was a situation for the second pickup and a situation with that Metrosis rider. The family that I'm talking about, the Spanish speakers family, they were not having any understanding of what was happening. Meantime, they were there for an hour. They got late to their appointment, but not only that is the bottom line. The point is that there was no way the family could receive an explanation, neither from the driver, because maybe the driver is not bilingual, but not even from the dispatcher or any staff from the Metro Access that can communicate to the family the situation. Now, mother is writing this with his her young son, who is with an intellectual disability. He has seizures, and he so with autism. So he was about to get seizures. Mom was so nervous about the situation, and she was trying to ask the driver. And even the mother received a call from a person that could relate and speak English, but the driver refused at that point to really talk to the other person and give an explanation to the family to know what is going to happen or what was going on. So I am sharing this just to say that I do believe Metrosis have the resources to communicate with people from different languages, and this one's in Spanish. So please be aware how that cannot happen again, because that is just outrageous. And that can be just facilitate the service, because you have the staff, and the driver should just to facilitate the communication with the English speaker person that is trying doing the interpretation for the family, and or communicate to the dispatcher and find one peer staff and communicate the situation to the family. Thank you. I don't see any other public comment right now, but I'm sure, so I think that we are going to move with the agenda.
Well, one second, if I can get additional detail from you so we can make sure we pinpoint all the involved parties. I know that in the call center, during most any portion of the regular day, there definitely is Spanish-speaking individuals that would have been able to translate. We'll have to track down and see what's going on with the operator as to why they would not facilitate the English-to-English communication as well, which they certainly should have. But I would definitely like to get the additional details of the day so we can pinpoint down to the actual individuals involved.
Certainly, we'll provide those details. Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Steve.
Yeah, just a question. Does WMATA have a fund whereby if a passenger is, you know, through fault, which can occur, sustains a loss, that that person has the opportunity to be reimbursed for that loss? Is there a fund that deals with that?
There's a claims department that handles all the claims for Metro Access, and it is through WMATA. So there's a specific claims process that individuals can go through to facilitate that.
I'm not
understanding
the question. A fund source loss, what?
Well, you know, this rider was 3.5 hours late to her job, and we don't know what transpired after that. But I was just curious if WMATA had some kind of opportunity to follow that through in terms of, from a financial standpoint.
For those particular types of requests, those are definitely handled on a case-by-case basis. The claims fund that I was referencing would be an actual loss, like if there was a damage to property or something of that nature. But in terms of the question that you're raising, we definitely handle those requests on a case-by-case basis and facilitate accordingly.
Well, something happens on WMATA.
unfortunately, on a daily basis. It happens on a daily basis, and people are late to work and lose many hours. How could they continue to function if they were, people were claiming for all the times that they've been late to work or a loss of time?
Madam Chair, it's the legal issues, but if you take a look at what happens in the airlines, if it's an act of God, or it's weather, or the train breaks down, then you're not covered. You expect that to happen. When somebody doesn't like the way your perfume smells, that's something else. When one of the flight attendants takes you off a plane for no apparent reason, that's something else. And so I think what Stephen was asking about was in a unique situation. That's what Mr. June was saying, that each situation is handled individually. We don't expect to reimburse everybody that's late. But when it's an abnormal situation, then there should be some way to accommodate that.
Thank you. Madam Chair,
yes.
I'm not going to say this for sensationalism, but 8 or 9 years ago, when I went to a meeting over in Montgomery County, and one of the government officials, I won't say who, said to me, so, we need to hire people with disabilities. So that's great. And people can sort of do a lot of things. And the only thing is that they can't use Metro Access. I said, why not? Well, because they never show up for that. And, that's a kind of an indictment, unfairly, I think, assessed. But nevertheless, there are problems with people getting to work. We need to work harder on that so that people actually get opportunities to go to work.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I take a second? I've noticed that our chair of Bus Rail has arrived, Mr. Miller.
Hi there.
And something that I'd like to refer to the Bus Rail Committee, since I won't be here next week for it, but for the last 2 weeks, at approximately 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I have received email alerts from WMATA telling me there may be changes in the rail schedule that will affect your trip. And at 4:45 in the evening, I find out that suddenly the trains are going to be skipping certain stations, signal tracking, or running at 25-minute intervals. And that's a little late to make any accommodation for that. And I think Bus Rail needs to look into that next week and bring it up. And we'll also come up with our Metro Access request to use twice the bus fare, since clearly the calculation of the Metro Access fare isn't based on the fact that every night they're changing the rail schedule and making it worse. So those are two items, since both the chair of Metro Access and the chair of Bus Rail is here, I think you guys ought to discuss, because I won't be here.
Madam Chair, this is Brian Miller. I certainly have no objection to add that to our agenda next week. Brian, any objection?
I guess we could look at that in terms of fare policy. Because that's the number of the
budget. You can.
We will. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's Christian Kent. Good evening. I just wanted to respond to a couple of things that were said. I think for additional information on the bus rail issue that Phil just raised, were those messages meant to be reminders of aspects of SafeTrack that have already been communicated, or were they in addition to? Phil's giving me nonverbals that sound like in addition to.
The reminder was SafeTrack, and in addition to SafeTrack, they would be single tracking at 3 different sites.
Okay.
And they've done that 3 weeks in a row now. The other thing they have done is last 3 weekends, because of switch problems between Smithsonian and McPherson Square, without any announcement, without any information on the PIDs, without any personnel on the station, They have single track and they're running at 25 to 30 minute intervals. And I emailed the general manager. He responded to me that they were going to take care of it, and this weekend it wasn't taken care of. They did it again. So they're doing a lot of during the day and after hours track work without having it on the website. And the PIDs just go black. This weekend, Metro Center PID on the red line was just a black screen. There was no information at all.
So, Phil, if I could follow up, while you were contacting the general manager, did you also include access services staff on that?
No, I didn't. I apologize. That was just about what happened on the track. And I did happen to run into the director of rail services on the same train I was on coming here, and he explained to me it would be occurring 3 weekends in a row, and I said it would be nice if it went to the website, and they said that it would, but it didn't.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I asked you that, I mean, it is good that you let the general manager know things from time to time, because obviously this can come up in front of the board. Giving him an opportunity to prepare for that or to be aware of it is helpful. But this is a big place. One of the functions that my department serves is that we're the ones that make a big hairy deal about accessibility to the rest of the staff. So, I mean, if it's something technical, like, you know, put out an announcement at a different time, we're going to reach deeper into the organization to make sure that people who handle those things get on it. Because sometimes, you know, by the time it filters through a lot of executives, it's a long way down. That's something that Mr. Blake's office does. But I do appreciate you bringing that to our attention, because obviously if the messages aren't timely, then that's not going to help customers to plan. And we're already, you know, with the SafeTrack, putting people at a disadvantage on planning their travels. So we don't want to make it worse. So we do appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, actually, leaving the chain of command, the very first thing I did the first time that it happened was to send a complaint online to the complaint department. And 2 days later, they said, thank you very much. We'll send it to the appropriate person and don't bother us again, basically.
Well,
which is when
yeah.
I forwarded that to the GM.
That's one of the reasons why I'm answering your particular point tonight, to tell the whole committee something. That, you know, the complaint customer service process is for our customers to use. It is a process where the complaint is registered. It is investigated and a response comes, but it's not as immediate as something that's going on right now that you're trying to correct. Those of you who serve on this committee have an advantage that because you work for the board and you have a relationship with staff, when you communicate with us, we're able to kind of communicate some of your more real-time concerns directly where they need to go within the organization, and that's important. It's not to say the customer service department can't do it, but if you have this role on the committee, you know, I'm just suggesting that you take advantage of it, because later, you know, if we want to talk about what's wrong, at least we'd be able to attest to, yes, we got the call, we looked into it, we know where our team went wrong, and what caused the situation. And ultimately, that's what we need to do to fix the problems. The other thing I wanted to address is that tonight you've invited our chief financial officer to come, and I expect that there will be a presentation on that shortly. But, you know, the comment about requesting the Metro Access fare to be changed to twice bus, you know, I haven't said anything about that the last several times that you all have brought it up, because I do not want to give the impression that the access services staff wants to take a political position on a policy issue that the committee is interested in. But I would point out to you that the board is trying to balance a pretty difficult financial situation. And I think it's important that you know that when this subject comes up, that our response on staff is a matter of factual information. It's just that if we were to change the policy to twice bus, it is the same thing essentially as a reduction in the fare, which, you know, they have been considering increases in fare when they have a financial problem. That would be a reduction. And while I, you know, don't necessarily you know, it's not my role to take a position on whether you should ask for that or not. I just think it is important for you all to know that what you are requesting would essentially be moving in the other direction, away from finding money to pay for things. It would actually bring in less money to pay for things. And that's something that the board is already struggling with. So I was interested to know whether or not this request was based on a temporary period of time because of the problems that, you know, repairing the rail system, or whether this was an ongoing recommendation, because I don't know that I saw that clarified in any of your documents.
Yeah, in the minutes, what we stated was because of the ongoing midday work, late night work, and SafeTrack, the accuracy of the fare calculator, and Omari has done a very nice job of adjusting the fare calculator to meet the planned outages, but there are so many outages that are occurring during midday and late night. What we had requested is during the duration that this was going on. And one of the things that we brought up was the fact that they're going to be increasing the bus and rail fares by a nice chunk, up to $2 minimum. That's a double hit to Metro Access. And so one of the things we talked about was, one, either go to twice the bus during the period of fast track for accuracy, not for fare, or do something that would make that double increase to Metro Access more equivalent to what's happening to bus and rail people. And the other things that would be done are changes in the maximum, using the senior fare or the disabled fare times two. But our group, when we talked about it, was to leave that up to staff because they have to balance the budget, and I'm very aware of the problems. But we didn't want it balanced on the back of the Metro Access rights. We're happy to pay a fair share of it, but I think at this point it's more than fair. And that's why we brought that up. And twice the bus was only temporary. And Amari responded to the initial respect, and that's why we dropped it. But now that you're doing so much track work during the day and at night, I mean, it's constant.
I appreciate the clarification, Phil, just because I want to make sure that we haven't been asked to evaluate anything yet. And I just want to make sure I fully understand the request. But thank you for that clarification. That was helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam Chair, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ryan. Just to add to, or maybe to add further clarification to what Dr. Bozner was saying, I'm just looking at my email right now here, and it had an advisory that was issued at 4:40 p.m. that said, you know, an advisory has been issued, may affect your trip, and it's for evening trips between December 5th and 9th, and this is December 5th, so, and this was issued at 4:40 p.m. Due to rebuilding, that sort of thing. So, again, if somebody has to make alternative arrangements, it would have been good to have that notification. Even if it's just a reminder. It started too late, so basically, you know, maybe it's something, what's it, there's a variety of arrangements today, tomorrow, or that. So, anyway, just to, you know, to help further clarify the issue that Dr. Bozner was raising. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to proceed with the agenda, and we have a presenter, Jim.
Oh, she's coming.
About your normal day. Normal day service.
She's coming back too.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. Sorry. My name is Jim Hughes. I'm the Managing Director of Rail Transportation, also the Managing Director of Intermodal Planning, and I wanted to come tonight and give you a brief update of where we are getting ready for inauguration. We know one thing for certain. We know who's going to be inaugurated. Inauguration is Friday the 20th. I'm going to go over a very brief outline of what we're doing for bus and rail, but I want to start by saying a lot of it is still unknown. Secret Service is now involved in setting up where the barricades are going to be, where people are going to be. There are events going on most of the week, beginning Wednesday night through Friday, inauguration through the weekend, Saturday, and into Sunday. For Inauguration Day, Friday, February 20th, rail service will open early, 4 a.m. We'll operate through midnight. We're going to run basically a rush hour services from 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. After that, we'll run our evening service. We'll be charging peak fares until 9 p.m., from opening till 9 p.m. We'll also be charging for parking. We're expecting station closings, but we don't know which ones yet, because as I mentioned, the Secret Service hasn't decided. It will be Mount Vernon. They set up a lot of activities there. It will be a number of stations around the mall. Last year they did Federal Triangle, they did Smithsonian. We don't know which ones are going to do this year. We're assuming it's similar to 4 years ago, but we're not sure yet. From a bus perspective, we run a Saturday supplemental service. Same service we just ran on Veterans Day. We have to do, because of the inauguration and because of the parade, we truncate services as they get to the secure area. Turn around. We also give transfers so people can get off the bus, get on the train, get across the area if they have to, and get back on the bus on the other side. From a Smart Trip, we are going to sell commemorative cards, 1 day pass, good for inauguration only for 10 days. We sold online, bulk sales ahead of time, and also be sold at select giant CVS stores. The ones that aren't sold ahead of time, leftover ones, we will sell on inauguration day for $14.50. 4 years ago, we sold approximately 44,000 cards in advance. And on the day of inauguration, we'll also do hand sales at the end of the line stations. Every end of the line except Huntington, we'll also sell them at Stadium Armory and Pentagon City for the $10 card with an $8 stored value. For where we do hand sales, we're only accepting credit debit cards. We can't handle cash. We're working with DDOT, Secret Service, Transit Police, to make sure that we're ready. We need traffic control in the armored stations. We need areas to offload buses, help with identifying where passengers are telling passengers where to go, where we can store buses. We've begun internally visiting each of our stations to make sure that we're ready for inaugurations. We'll be there by the 20th, but we've got stuff in the station, some areas where contractors are working. We get rid of as much as we can before the 20th to get us as much platform space as we can to store our customers. We will begin, I don't know when, soon, sometime this month, putting stuff online so that we will have our, how do you get around, what's going on. If you're going, there's two major events on the day of inauguration, so the inauguration itself. There are about 250,000 tickets given out to that to get into the secure, those areas. You must have a ticket. About 125,000 of them are on north of the Capitol, and 125 of them will be approaching south of the Capitol. Watch the event on the mall, and you have to get to the mall. The inauguration will happen first, then there's the parade down Pennsylvania Avenue, and same thing, that's in the secure area. Remind everybody that once you're north of Pennsylvania Avenue, there's no way to get south of Pennsylvania Avenue or vice versa until after the parade. So remind everybody to plan your trip so that you know what you're doing ahead of time. We will have a lot of visitors from outside the area who are not familiar with our area. We've got some brochures and some online activities for them, telling them how to get here, get to the area that they've got to get to, and go home the same way. 4 years ago, 8 years ago, I guess every inauguration we end up with a lot of lost souls in our system going, I don't know how to get back to my bus, or I don't know how to get back to my neighbor that I came to visit, and so on and so forth. We also are working with transit police throughout the region. We bring in about 100 transit police from other transit properties who help us with crowd control that day. And so we are doing that again. It's very helpful to have people in uniform to help with the crowd control. And so I think that's covered everything I wanted to cover and leave it open for questions.
Sam, Jerry.
Thanks, Suzanne. You have a question?
Hi there. So I have a couple of questions. One is for elevator and escalator outages. If you guys have looked at the stations that are closest to the to where the inauguration is going to be and which ones have working elevators and working escalators. The second part of my question is for people that are using the elevators, will the elevators kind of be manned by one of your personnel to make sure that each elevator going up and down is actually full with people and allowing people with disabilities to go first so that they're not waiting at the end of a line of like 20 strollers or things like that? We know that that can be really challenging, like during the cherry blossom festival and that sort of thing. So I'm wondering if you plan ahead.
As I mentioned, we visited about a dozen stations so far in the downtown area, and we are trying to work on deal with escalators first, trying to work with the escalators, for instance, trying to make most of them exiting from our system early in the morning and being entrance later in the day after the events, and how we make that happen, which of the escalators are working, which ones go up and which ones go down. So we're doing that by station. We're also looking at the elevators. We are going to have elevator and escalator mechanics at a number of our downstairs downtown locations. We will try to have we'll try to have people in uniform at the elevators, but it's very hard for us to control who's getting on an elevator first. Some of our elevators, last year we had, 4 years ago, we had Smithsonian open on one side and the line getting up and down this escalator. Getting up and down that elevator had to be 30 people deep.
Yeah, I was there during that time, and what they were doing is if you had a Metro Access ID, you were allowed to board the elevator first. And so people that had other needs but didn't have the Metro Access, they had to wait, but other people were able to board first. But sometimes the standing in line, being in crowds, being like in that sort of situation is very difficult for people with disabilities.
When we talked to the police, they had people there 4 years ago, and they were basically encouraged people in strollers to take a child in a stroller and use the escalator, which was a walker that day. But those types of things is what we're going through now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here tonight. Just two quick questions. The first one is, I'm just curious why Huntington won't allow for sale of the special operation passes. And then secondly, I'm curious, are you anticipating any special arrangements for bus or rail for January 21st, when there's some talk of being an alternative event going on out in the mall that day?
Looking at where we did our hand sales in the past, Huntington is not one of our biggest places for that. And we're kind of stretched where we can sell them, and because we're trying to include Pentagon City and we have to include City of Armory, at the moment we don't have enough staff to do Huntington. Hence the reason not to do that. On the 21st, the next day, there's going to be a march. I don't know what the name of it is. They wanted to call it the Million Women's March, but evidently that one was taken. But so, again, we're finding out as this goes on. There have been a number of petitions to have rally that day, and we're trying to figure out some of the details so that we can accommodate that, too. But it's going to be a very busy weekend for the entire region.
My name is Doris Ray, and I live in Fairfax County, working in Arlington. So I'm wondering whether there are going to be late night hours, given that people will be going to various events
laws and things after the inauguration. And secondly, I'm wondering, in getting the word out, what methods regarding changes and things that we want people to do that day, how are you providing accessible formats that people can access? For example, are you going to have something on the, in addition to things that stands and things like, I don't know, they're having Braille for people who need that in large print, but I'm wondering if you're going to have some kind of separate access through the phone system for those who aren't using computer but are using the phone system. So that's kind of an idea and a thought. And then the last thing is to second the comment that's already been made regarding stationing Metro employees or someone who, you know, whether it's Metropolitan Police or what it is, at the elevators so that people with disabilities can come to the front of the line and get on if they are there. And we presented, particularly people with mobility impairments, especially who aren't going to be able to get down in the subway any other way. And in particular, if the practice the last time was to bring people with Metro access IDs forward, that's just fine. Except I think it should be anybody who has clearly a disability which requires them to be able to use the elevator, any wheelchair user, for example, or walker user, or whatever, because people with disabilities who regularly use fixed route and not Metro access still are using the fixed route because of those elevators. So.
Thank you, Doris. Thank you, brought up three things. The first one was late night, and we are operating till the railroad till midnight that night. After 9 o'clock, our ridership on inauguration usually drops off. Our frequencies will drop off, but we will run through all the stations at, through midnight. For stations where we typically close one of the entrances late at night, we'll keep them open with the exception of Arlington Cemetery because it's closed. You asked about how we're disseminating information, and I'm not 100% planned to answer that question at the moment because that's what we're developing at the moment, and we haven't finished it yet because we don't know the details. But we will make it accessible online. We will make it accessible through some phone access, and we will have handouts, but I can't give you the details as I sit here today. Lastly, you reiterated the issue about how we're going to handle the crowds at the elevators at our key stations, and as mentioned earlier, I'm sorry to cut your name, we will have people there in uniforms to help. I'm glad I'm not a person in a uniform and trying to fight that crowd, but we will have people there to do crowd control and get the appropriate people on the elevators and encourage the other people to use the escalators.
But you will allow anybody?
Yes.
Not just Metro access users.
That's correct.
And the last thing, though, I want to encourage you about the late night service on inauguration night, because that is something that in the past certainly I have availed myself of, and others have availed themselves of. I mean, you're going to have a lot of people out there. I think that's certainly one night where people, those parties and balls go on to 2 p.m. or 2 a.m.
We have plenty of service out there. I've never been to a ball, but I've been out in the system, and we'll still be running late trains, and people can get around.
Yeah,
thank you.
After
midnight. I can operate after midnight. One last thing, Jen didn't mention earlier, all of the safe track work that we do, all the late night track work we're doing, we're suspending for that week, so from the Saturday before
to the Sunday after, we won't be doing any track work unless there's an emergency and we have to get around.
Okay, Breanne, you have a question, and then we're going to have to move forward.
Yeah, me, thank you. I have one comment. I just want to say this would be a perfect opportunity to lock the whiteboard. Just want to say that. Thank you.
I was waiting for your comment. We're trying.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz, for your presentation. And I hope that we can get updates because it's a bus rail or some kind of way of knowing any further instructions that will be helpful on that day.
Thank you for your time, and as we get updates, we'll bring them to the committee.
Thank you for coming. We're going to move forward, and Mr.
Madam Chair, yes. I'd be happy to do an introduction for you. I have here seated next to me Metro's Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Dennis Amasike, and he is delighted to come here and provide you a financial briefing. So without further ado, Mr. Amasike.
Thank you, Christian. Appreciate it. Good evening to everyone. With respect to the budget that the general manager has proposed us, hopefully you know, in November he proposed the operating budget for FY18. And just last week, he provided the board with his proposed budget for capital budget for FY18 as well as the FY18-23 program. Overall, it's about a $3 billion total budget, of which the operating piece is $1.8 billion, and the capital piece is $1.25 billion. The capital budget is about $250 million higher than last year. The operating budget is $37 million, approximately 2%. Higher than FY17. I know that you've had all of the conversations about the budget, how it's been developed compared to last year. Last year, as you recall, because the general manager was just coming in, the board chose to give him some time to develop his own vision and game plan, therefore did not increased fares last year, which would have been otherwise something that the board would have to consider last year, or even to reduce service, which was, frankly, one of the options that was on the table prior to the announcement of the new general manager. And so the board essentially took a series of what we would call one-time, if you will, processes in order to balance the budget. Next year, the budget that the general manager has proposed is balanced, but it will be helpful for all of us, management, customers, and frankly for those of you in this room. But it is one, and the jurisdictions that fund us, but it is one that I think he has called one of shared sacrifice from all of the constituents, those that writers and those that we all work for. Fundamentally, it does a couple of things. It reduces staff by 1,000 positions, and in that process, some of which are already ongoing, and other ones are tied to the service reduction that is proposed. But it reduces staff by 1,000 positions, which is expected to reduce the budget need by $50 million. It calls on our customers to contribute more through higher fares on board bus and rail, increased package fees of about 10 cents, and also indirectly, which impacts our customers because it also reduces service. in the aggregate, those three efforts will contribute about $50 million towards balancing the budget. Then we also use this part of our preventive maintenance federal funds. $60 million will be used next year compared to $95 million last year to help balance the budget. And finally, it calls on the jurisdictions to provide an additional $130 million. Combined, that results in an increase of $290 million in terms of overall funding needs. And the reason for that need, even though I said earlier, if you recall, that the budget itself is only grown up by $37 million, the revenue side of the ledger has been significantly depleted. We, and I'm sure you know this better than I do, we have not been retaining our customers on the system as we projected. Obviously, SafeTrack is part of the challenge, but fundamentally, the quality of our service have not been what it should be. And customers are telling us that not writing us as much. And so, most of the things in the budget are designed to address the service reliability issues, along with safety, along with other things. But to get there, to balance the budget in a way that is both fair and not most impactful on just one segment of our contributors, the GM made that proposal to the board. As you know, the board will look at that and then ultimately make a decision in terms of how the board itself would like to balance the budget. And if you were at the committee meeting last Thursday, you saw some of that conversation. It is difficult and it's painful for all of them. We'll walk through that as we have in the past. With respect to this committee, the budget of the street does include elements that are of particular interest to you. One of which is, while we have seen a significant drop in ridership on the bus and rail, metro rail, we haven't seen that kind of drop with respect to metro assets. And so as we've constructed the budget, we've tried to make sure that metro access continue to be appropriately resourced. So next year, well, all the elements of the budget will be reduced. Metro access is actually going up by 6%, $6 million. Obviously, Christian can talk to you about whether he's right, where he is, and the plan in terms of implementation when we get there. But I wanted to point out the fact that, at least on the operating side, while most of your members will be impacted by fare adjustment, because the fares going up, obviously your portion of the fares will also go up. But we're leaving the cap where it is, and the cap is not going up. Although we're increasing the cap on the regular rail fares, we are not increasing that on this side of the ledger. So again, it might not be much, but that's again an attempt. It's our recognition of the fact that we need to do whatever we can to mitigate the impact of some of these budget activities on some of our customers. On the capital side of the budget, I mentioned a little bit earlier that the capital budget will be about $1.25 billion for next year. And over the six-year timeline, we're looking at about $7 billion compared to $5 billion in the last CFA. While most of the things in the capital program go to improving safety and reliability in terms of the overall system, I want to just highlight two things or a couple of things that hopefully will be of some interest to you. Again, while we haven't done a great job replacing, or why it's been more difficult replacing the rail cars, we've actually done as an organization a fantastic job replacing both bus and metro access vans. And next year, we're investing almost $17 million to purchase the full 225 vehicles compared to $9 million last year to procure 207 vehicles. Again, this is as part of our
continuing efforts to make sure that our vehicles are up to date. We're also investing in lighting. Again, there are three key stations that we are hoping you will see the difference next year, Union Stations, Smithsonian, and Faraday. These six mezzanines of those stations will see significant investments in improved lighting in those particular stations, again, which is a good thing. And with respect to the railcars, which are coming in ultimately over the next year and a half or so, we will get to 784 railcars that were contracted and TORSAC is providing. As you ride on main line, you're seeing some of those railcars already. And I really want to acknowledge actually the work of this committee in terms of some of the improvements, you know, making the aisles a little wider, in terms of additional seating, and obviously additional bars and handholds and doors and trolley trains to improve the final construct of those trains. And those things are things that this committee made sure happened, and I want to thank you for that. So with that, I will take any questions that the committee may have for
you. I'm sure that everyone at the table has a question, so we're going to start with Charlie and go around Robin. 3 minutes for a question and answer. We'll be very conscious of the 3 minutes so that everyone can get a question. Also, we have Barbara, we haven't forgotten in the audience. Okay? Charlie, it's your show.
Madam Chair, as my husband, I'm quick to ask questions, but tonight I'm so lost up in that I have no questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Andrew?
I'm the better lost trying to see it.
Excuse me. Thanks, Ray.
Okay.
I have no questions.
All right. Brian?
Brianne?
Yes, I'm sorry. I have no question, but I actually just came up with one, and I'm wondering if you have a budget line item regarding the improvement of communication method in communicating with the public through more TV, the involved the location, the bus station, the bus stop, those kinds of things. What does that look like for FY 2018?
Thank you, Mary. Unfortunately, I know the communication has been part of the challenge and part of the feedback we get from all of our customers. Unfortunately, I don't have the details bus rail that I can share with you tonight, but I can certainly provide that and make it available to the committee.
Brianne, I just want to add something. That the elements that go into communication that you're talking about, I think, given the size of the operating budget, I think the whiteboards are covered. that part, I think, yes, so I definitely want to make sure I put that in there, but I think that where we really need to see funds, and I'm sure that Mr. Anasike will be able to produce this, would be in the area of training. And, in light of what's going on at Metro right now, with SafeTrack and all of the other issues that have come up about service reliability, sensitivity to customers with disabilities, as Ms. Bellamy says very often, working with senior citizens and the fact that they're going to need special assistance using bus, rail, and paratransit. Training is a very important line item that I think we probably just want to show, obviously that there's money set aside for things like that. because I think in the long run, that's probably where we've seen the greatest issue, is that, you know, it's, even if they, if an employee has all the equipment to do their job, it's knowing the right way to interface with the public. So, you know, I think we should include that information in our response.
Okay.
Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nasike, for being here tonight. This is a special opportunity. We really appreciate you making time for us to talk to you and for you to talk to us. I have two quick questions. And you may have covered this, so I apologize if I missed it somewhere, but I'm curious to know, first, if the budget projections make the assumption that the late night service on Friday and Saturday will be curtailed to the currently projected 1 p.m., proposed 1 p.m., not 1 p.m., that'd be really early, wouldn't it? 1 a.m., close to the times. And so, you know, are the budget projections of making that assumption that there will be earlier closures continuing? And then secondly, is there any expectation that the reduced fare rider program or the free trip program for Metro Access eligible individuals will be impacted in any way? And are you looking to those two components of our program for possible revenue generation? Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. With respect to your first question, the proposed budget does include, does anticipate the change in service schedule proposed by the general manager will be implemented in FY18. I do know that the general manager and the board looking at complementary efforts on boards that may mitigate some of those. But I will acknowledge at this point that yes, the service proposal with respect to rail reflects the earlier close that the general manager has proposed. With respect to the free ride on mainline, that, but those particular initiatives at this point are not affected. Again, as part of our recognition that we, in constructing the budget, need to be as sensitive as we can to some aspects of the system, the general manager has made the decision not to change any of those components at this time. And so unless the board makes a different decision, I expect that those elements will remain in place as they are today.
Thank you. Just a very quick follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair, to the first question. For some reason that decision got reversed about early closings, what do you think the budget impact would be of returning to the traditional late night service on Fridays and Saturdays?
The net impact of those changes was about $2.5 million. So it was about $6 million overall cost. Revenues were about four. So you're looking at between $2 and $2.5 million net impact. So if that's reversed, we need to identify about $2-$2.5 million that need to go to help balance the budget. As you know, we're required to have a balanced budget. And at this point, that is the proposal that is before the board.
Okay, and I know it's more about, not just about budget with respect to that question, but I'm just curious what the budget impact was. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Suzanne. Hi, I just have a, I guess more of a comment about just raising the prices for the fares. I know that it's kind of a necessary evil and it seems like the easiest way to make money, but I really think if you're not able to keep your ridership the same as it was the year before, if ridership's going down, I think that raising the prices will continue to make it go down, or people finding alternate ways of getting to and from work or where they need to go. Additionally,
I don't think it will bring people that didn't leave Metro back to riding Metro again. And I know that we had discussed in here on a couple of different occasions just exploring other avenues of revenue for Metro in terms of like advertising or community outreach, or like, I know somebody had brought up adopt a bus station, but also like adopt a rail station, like things like that where the community can get more involved to bring back the Metro to its, you know, glory days type thing. So just other avenues to try that might not be as fast, but things that the community can be reinvested.
Thank you, Suzanne. I will tell you that I don't disagree with anything that you said. And I think you will find that the general manager agrees with you. The reality, unfortunately, is that we are doing all of those things, perhaps not to the degree that you suggest, but then enough. Again, when you're dealing with a $290 million, almost $300 million British funding shuffle, the options that you have are fairly limited. In constructing the budget that General Manager has proposed, I think we've taken that into consideration. If he had the option, he will not be raising fares. He will not be cutting service. That's the mission, right? I mean, and every time we cut service or raise fares, we make it a lot easier for Uber or Lyft or somebody else, you know, to essentially skim off the top. So yeah, we are comments out of position. So we are doing a lot more than we did before an advertiser, obviously. But that, and that's a $22 million bogey in terms of advertiser. That's a good thing. We're looking for ways to increase that. But the market, obviously, you know, it's a little difficult to exploit. We are doing the stations. We brought in new plans. We're doing the side plans. All of these things are designed to make it a little bit more seamless for our customers to use it, a little bit more easier for them to use it. So we are doing all of those things, and if you have other ideas, please feel free to share them. Unfortunately, those ideas are, while significant, insufficient, you know, to address the challenges that we face.
Okay, thank you.
Carol.
No, it's not.
Thank you.
I'll skip me for a moment. Gallagher.
Good evening, and thank you for being here. I do believe, or I want to believe, that the physical budget also involves a quality assurance program that will lead to an accurate maintenance of the elevators. As a daily rider, I not only depend on the Metro to take me to from point A to point B, but if the elevator is not working, I do not do that. So I would like to see that as an effective, really, measure of quality control, because so many times it is not the new equipment that you are going to bring in, it's how the maintenance and the training to the staff to really keep doing a good maintenance and supervision is what it keeps this, equipment, you know, alive and for longer.
Right. So, thank you, Mr. Silver. Just a quick response. One of the things that the general manager focused on, obviously, in addition to safety, reliability, and physical accountability, is really on execution. If you recall, some of you may recall that last year he reduced capital programs $1.2 billion to $950 million, because for the last 5 years, the regions have done their parts to some degree in providing resources, but which were not invested as expected. And some of the things that he has done, or directed to be done to make sure that we're doing the thing that you pointed out, is making the quality assurance group actually report directly to him. Last year, we ended up FY16 for the first time spending about 85%, investing about 85% of the capital budget, and this year we're expecting to do more. And as we get a little better in execution, I think all of the issues that you indicated will be addressed. But that section is there, they are fully resourced, and the expectation is they will become a lot more aggressive in making sure that we, the staff, do what we're supposed to do in terms of making sure that the equipment and the systems themselves are there to effectively serve our customers.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bill?
Time is up. Having been to the last two finance committee meetings, I don't have a lot of questions. There are going to be some more workshops. I told you that last Thursday. I'll point out that my guideline, this committee guideline, has been SAS, safety, accessibility, sustainability. And that all costs money and it costs time. And based on the last meeting, the board hasn't figured out how to do it. So asking a question at this point is not something that's worthwhile because we don't have the answers. Okay. What I would make is a request, and that is in previous budget cycles, during the final workshop, there was representation from this committee and also from the RAC so that the customers in the disability community has access. And I'll make that request to you, but I'll also make that to Mr. Goldman, who is the chair of the finance subcommittee. And I think that's really important as things work out, that we work those things out. The major issue is the decrease in service and the increase in fares. The increase in fares are linear for bus and rail. They're double for Metro Access. The decrease in service on rail makes it difficult to accurately calculate the appropriate fare for Metro Access, because we have the plan SafeTrack, and we know what that is, and there have been adjustments already made to the fare calculator. The problem is late night, the midday, and the random access. And as a rider of both, quite frequently, the fastest fare, which is charged on rail, is not really the fastest way to get from one place to another. And so in doing the final calculations, for sustainability, and you have to count the dollars, but we also have to count the fairness. And that is that a formula come out that is fair and accurate for the calculation of the Metro Access fares. And we have made several suggestions. I know, you know, I talked to you about twice the bus fare. We've also talked about using twice the disability fare because everybody on Metro Access is disabled, or lowering peak fare. And that's something that you can crunch the numbers. We don't want it to get so low that it's no longer sustainable. But it's something that I think the board needs to hear from our community to help you out, because we have DC threatening a jurisdictional veto because they want 3 a.m. closure, at which point we won't be safe anymore because you can no longer do track work. They no longer want anybody to have a higher fare in your jurisdictions, which are funded from Richmond and funded from Annapolis, won't pay that, in which case it's not sustainable. And so those are all the issues, and what I'm asking is that there is representation at the workshop from the disability community as well as from the RAC so that we can support you in what needs to be done because we all want a sustainable system. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I will convey your request to participate in the workshop to Mr. Goldman, given the tenor of those conversations at the end, I should not be there. But that said, I will certainly make that request to him. Of course, and he controls the agenda along with the rest of the board. And at this point, I'm not sure how they intend to proceed. I will convey that to him as soon as possible. To your credit, Chair, you guys have certainly been clear about what the construct of the fastest route should be. I think off the record we've had some conversations about what the implications are. I think you know what to say. I think the question that we've not been able to solve is that in these times, with $290 million funded a resource gap, how much additional reductions can the organization afford? Obviously, as things improve, and other elements of the system continue to grow and can make up that difference, I think it becomes a more favorable conversation, a palatable conversation to have at that point. At this point, it has been difficult to include that as part of the equation in light of the other changes that have been proposed, which does not mean that you should not be asking for it. Either at this forum or the board, what I would tell you, as I know you know, is that it becomes a lot more difficult to make those kinds of changes in light of the rest of the struggle.
Yeah, our interactive fare loss recovery is about $8 million. And so the question is, how much of that $8 million would be reduced by changing what had to be changed? And again, I leave it to you to figure it out. The other point, and I'll bring this up to Christian, is when they do adopt a schedule as far as reduced service, that should increase dwell time. And one of the things we push for safety is if you have increased dwell time, to give more time opening the doors and closing the doors so people with disabilities can actually get on and off safely. And so that's more for Christian than for you, but that's part of the discussion that's going on.
Hey, Doris. I thank you for coming as well. And I will ditto the remark regarding cutting service. Actually, my rendition is cutting service while increasing the fares is going to drive people away. And in the case of persons with disabilities who are making an effort to stay in the fixed-route system, it will drive them to more expensive metro access. But I wanted to ask you with regard to revenues and such. About the situation with many, many thousands of riders riding in from jurisdictions that are adjacent but not in the compact area, using rail, using in some cases metro access, and not paying their jurisdictions, not paying subsidies. To my knowledge, that is the case. You can tell me if I'm wrong. But I think that we need to deal with that situation. And I'm wondering if that's being talked about. I also wanted to ask with regard to the Silver Line in second extension. Is going to be opening, if not during 18, during the longer range period, and people again across the border in Loudoun will start using the rail system, and like I said, they already are. They ride Loudoun Transit and get on the rail system. But then the question, my question is, as it's being expanded, what extra cost are you calculating? What extra cost the increased ridership may bring to the system, and what we're going to do about revenues? And this, by the way, also applies to people who come in as visitors. Many, many, we have a special situation here, who are not paying a thing into our system.
Thank you, Doris. You raise very interesting questions.
And as a Fairfax County resident, I know that we are bearing a lot of the costs. So, yeah. And I'm a
you know, a property owner, I own a home, and you know, my taxes are subsidized.
So, with respect to either visitors or residents outside of the jurisdictional areas who use Metro, and as you put it, the effort have contributed directly or to those communities appropriately to the system. That's a sort of philosophical question, right? Because transit does several things, right? And obviously, those individuals are paying the fares, but their communities that they're currently residing in are not paying into Metro. And some could argue that they also are getting some of the environmental benefits that transit provide, because Metro is not by the jurisdictions of the industry. It will be a long debate to try and resolve that tonight. What I will say is that I think the policy decision that the board has made, and to some degree the jurisdictions I'm living with, is that this set a fair structure to the extent, and they've tried to capture some of those by applying a distance-based fare compared to what you have here, rather in New York or Chicago or some other areas where you have just a flat fare, in which case those that travel from those distances will actually be paying even less. That said, that's something obviously that the board has considered every now and then. At this point, obviously, we're living with what we have. With respect to Silver Line, Phase 2, you are again correct that that will add significantly more cost, which is compared to the ridership that will come from that particular extension, which, for those of you who have followed the conversations lately, there's been some suggestions, rightly or wrongly, about what to do with Silver Line when it's time to open in 2019. What we've provided to the board is a sense of what that cost will be on both the operating as well as capital program. And the if you look at the cost curve over the next 10 years, part of that driver is the Silver Line. But the regions and the jurisdictions knew that. I mean, knew that from the time that this particular policy was put in place. So at this point, my expectation is that the board will confront those additional costs in FY18 and FY20. And obviously, we will discuss obviously the contributions that will be coming from Loudoun at that time, because they will be part of the construct and therefore should be paying some direct, making some direct contributions to the budget, in addition to the contributions that those residents in those areas who are finding their ways into Metro will continue to pay.
I just wanted to ask you one last thing, which was, am I correct that for the reduced fare, the federal government picks up the whole thing, or the whole difference between the reduced fare and, or is it picked up also by the Wamata compact areas as well? You know what I'm saying? The reduced revenue because somebody is paying the reduced revenue.
The difference between what the customer pays and the cost for reduced fare is picked up entirely by the compact areas.
Oh. But it's a federal requirement, right?
The federal government, yes, says you can provide reduced fares, but they do not have any of the cost.
Thank you, Mr. CFO, for your presentation. Just a quick question. Being a Fairfax County resident, also as my colleague just mentioned, the extension of the Silver Line going to the Dallas Airport, and we've been listening about this from newspapers and board of directors meetings, and there some says that this should be stopped, you know, no money available, the budget, and then of course the Virginia don't like that, and all of us are against it. Do you see anything in projection beyond the 2018 budget that this would affect the extension of the line to the Dallas Airport?
No, as you know, the construction of that line is born entirely by the good folks from Virginia. Obviously, with some contributions from the federal government. But what we know is that based on phase one, which and phase two is similar to phase one in most respects, we have a fairly decent sense of what the cost will be on both sides, both the operating and the capital. While I will leave the policy issues to the board, I think my expectation is that we will treat phase two the same way we treat everything else right now, in terms of how costs are shared among the jurisdictions on both the capital and operating side. And the board will resolve whatever policy issues they choose to engage in. For us, Metro has, and even excluding the Silver Line, Metro has a fundamental structural deficit with respect to its resources. We told the board this 2 years ago, and those fundamentals haven't changed in terms of what we see with respect to the cost cover, with respect to revenue, and what the gap is. That has been, while the Silver Line phase two adds to that, it doesn't change the fundamental construct. And so, from my perspective, the region needs to address that broader issue. And I think in addressing that broader issue, it will frankly make this conversation around the Silver Line.
Just to follow up, do you see the new administration would be interested, since we know who's coming as a Secretary of Transportation, or there's an appointment, about an appointment that has been nominated? Do you see there's going to be some contribution for the federal government for the second phase?
No, actually, the Virginia has all of the money needs for phase two. The construction resources are not the issue. The issue is the ongoing maintenance and operations. Obviously, we are hopeful with respect to the new secretary, and given our knowledge of both the area and the issues. I will tell you that as an organization, obviously Metro is engaged at all levels to make sure that this region and Metro in particular continue to be top of our wallet when it comes to making funding decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming to us as a committee this evening. I will say this is a tough budget, tough time, tough decisions. I will echo what Phil says. I think people are pretty happy that in light of this budget that at least for Metro Access, they're still able to get X amount of new vehicles and even with enhanced safety features this coming year. And then we've got assisted to the fact of maintaining the free ride program for conditionally eligible customers and keeping the caps in terms of the fares. While customers probably will not be happy with paying whatever the price is, if fares probably will be increased. These are tough times and we have to make some tough choices, but at least some things are still preserved.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate his comments.
Larry.
My question is twofold. First of all, what measures has Metro taken to try to encourage ridership? Many transit agencies, LA, New Jersey Transit does some interesting things to try to boost revenue of it and their revenue. What are some of the things that you guys are doing to try to make transit attractive? I know in many transit agencies, you don't ride us because you have a choice in other transit riders, but you use us because you have to, so to speak. What things are you guys doing to try to encourage people to use transit, enhancing customer service, for example. There's many things you can do with that. Advertising, that sort of thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, have you explored different ways of leveraging funding that may help enhance the system? I know in LA they have formerly Measure R, which will be running until 2030, and then they have Measure J, which leverages federal funding so that they can get some projects done quicker. Then perhaps Fast Tracks, which is comparable. Are there any ways that you could leverage funding to try to help improve your budget so that revenue, fair revenue, doesn't have to be your option?
Thanks again, Larry. I believe I mentioned a little bit earlier that Metro has actually done several things and continues to do several things to address the clients of our issue. I think perhaps it was a different group, but I mentioned the notion that Metro is a monopoly is long gone. I mean, we've got competition at all levels, private levels, Uber, you name it, Airship. These are folks that impact us on a daily basis. So we as an organization have to act and behave as if we're in a competitive marketplace. Because that's what's going on. And to that extent, what we're trying to do is to use the levers that we have to address the marketplace. Again, I mentioned a little bit earlier, the reason why we are dealing with UPass is that you have a concentration of folks, about 250,000 students around the colleges in this area. And if you think about that particular group of folks, they have to be right off peak for the most part. And so that allows us to offer a different pricing scheme to them. And they are in the system when we have excess capacity, so I don't have to start yet during the peak. Those are the other kinds of opportunities that we're trying to exploit to try and increase ridership and therefore revenue. We talk about advertising, we talk about joint development. All these things are all designed to reduce the impact on customers, to keep this organization from increasing fares every other year. So we're doing some of those on the federal level and frankly at the state level, which we partner with them to try to identify opportunities for additional funding that doesn't, that may ordinarily not be available to us. And some of the opportunities that you mentioned in LA, obviously some of those may involve some degree of local funding, some maybe even direct taxations. Obviously we are limited. One of the things that you've heard here is that Metro is one of the few transit agencies that doesn't have a dedicated stream of revenues. Again, I'm not advocating for one here. What I will advocate for is that there needs to be a stable source of resources for the organization, whether it's dedicated or not, as long as it's stable and as long as it's adequate to meet the needs of the customers in this region. I think that's what I will focus on.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
Question on how the budget is built, just very, very quickly. Is the budget built starting from the previous budget and then looking for changes, or is it built from scratch, that is from the bottom up, where each type of major expenditure needs to be justified?
So it's a little bit of both. I mean, I can tell you that we've done zero-based budgets. We've also done it, simply by looking at an incremental approach. But even in an incremental approach, we're still looking at the fundamentals, going back to say, okay, what is the level of service? Take Boston, for example, as we're going to offer next year. Looking at ridership, looking at changing environmental patterns and things like that. So that's the zero-based approach. We're saying, okay, we need to offer this many hours of service. This is why we need to do that. And these are the areas where the service is at. You're doing that, obviously, in some areas where you have a contract that's already in the list.
Okay, so therefore, you know, given that the agency is, you might call it, crisis mode at this point, is there a senior review level that is for expenditures before they're actually made, even though they're included in the budget, that transcends financial and transcends operational, but a senior official asks one more time, is this truly necessary or not?
The answer is yes. That's the general manager. Ultimately, we ended up with 1,000 positions being eliminated, but I can guarantee you that that's not where we started. He's asking the hard questions. He's forcing all of us to go back to the table, and he's making everyone justify their requests, their appropriations, beyond what we do in finance. But yes, he's asking that, obviously. The board gets an opportunity to also make its own set of evaluations and ultimately make a decision on what will be interest for this
nation. Okay. I ask that because we've had presentations last year for some things that might, in this particular mode, no longer be of interest, such as, for example, development of an app that could be used on rail stations, where, you know, these days there are apps, and it would probably be dangerous to ask people to take out their smartphones anyway to use the apps. And, you know, there's been a lot of IT additions on buses, which probably cost money and may not have been entirely necessary. That's why I'm asking about the senior level review in the upcoming year.
I appreciate your question and comment. You're absolutely right. I'm sure in a $3 billion budget, you will find some things smooth, like the app that may not obviously reflect some of your current priorities. And we are making a significant effort to eliminate those. I think one of the things you'll find in the budget for next year, I'll point you to, obviously, will be, you know, cell phones and so on. And as you know, when it falls on the security, that need is elevated, and that's one of the things that the general manager is making sure that we are doing to fast-track some of the improvements, some of the enhancements that are already in the system to make sure that they become available to our customers, particularly in those times of need. And those are some of the things that we are focused on. The app.
Yeah. Okay. No.
Okay.
One sentence more.
Steve, excuse me.
Yes.
We have some other people who have not asked any questions, and our time is running out. So can we go to Mary and Kay? I'm sorry.
I have learned a lot tonight. I have no questions at this time. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome. My first question, just sort of a small question, of the 1,000 or so positions you're getting rid of, how many are vacant and or unfunded?
In the first 500 positions, they're all funded. In the first 500 positions, about half of those were vacant. In the next 500, because those are tied to monthly service reduction, most of those are going to be filled positions. We are going through the process. We're beginning the process now. Obviously, if the board chooses not to eliminate reduced service, then we'll reverse that decision. But most of these seven positions will be funded. Obviously, what typically happens
which is why what typically happens in these kinds of decisions, obviously, there's a lot of consternation among the team. There's some folks that are leaving because they do not want to be part of that process. And so by the time we get to the actual sort of reductions, it is possible, obviously, I expect that more of those positions will become vacant, but right now most of them are.
Okay, I was going to ask if the jurisdiction, other jurisdictions, aka Maryland and Virginia, had agreed to contribute what was in the budget, but apparently that does not happen. So my last comment question, you know, you're very charming and your lovely accent is very disarming, but I continue to have suspicion and distrust of this electronic card that they want to give us, because I think they want to accurately track our usage and eventually impose a fee, because I think I heard you very smoothly say, air quotes for those listening, there is no intention to impose a fare on us at this time. So.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate your comments. So I really do want to stress that in spite of all the financial challenges that we face as an organization, there are some realities that we need to deal with, that we have to deal with, and this is one of them. I mean, we do not, it is not an easy decision to say we need to increase fares and it should be universal, right? And so as we make these decisions, obviously, our counsel, our preference is typically not to make decisions that we know will have significant impact on some of our customers, much more than others. So sometimes we're not successful. And so when I say that the goal is not to, the goal is to keep those fares where they are, that's the goal. And to the extent that we can make up some of those differences in other areas, that will be our recommendation. But I continue to encourage you to exercise your right to approach the board to make sure that they understand and to some degree respect those needs and those requests. And, you know, at the end of the day, we are work for them. So thank you again for your comments. Appreciate it.
Okay, you are
Barbara?
Hi, Barbara Millville, and thank you very much, Dennis, for the great detail, especially about the unspent funds in the CIP. And my question is relating to that. What happens to the unspent funds in the CIP? Because we've been following the lighting trail that you have very greatly presented in the WMATA website, and we see that there's some from past years that's not been spent. And also, I would like to know when you're going to be having the detail for the next year's CIP regarding the lighting. And we've been hearing lighting mentioned a lot in the board meetings and the committees they're in, and so that leads us to believe that you believe it's important, but we would like to very much see the detail.
Your first question deals with, you know, unspent funds. The way it works is that over the 5 years, the jurisdictions have made financial commitments with respect to capital funds. And whatever is not spent in each particular year is rolled forward. So Metro does not lose any funds. And part of the reason is that capital projects obviously take a long time. And so in some cases, something that was expected to be accomplished in a year takes 2-3 years to accomplish. Again, one of those things that has become central to the general manager's style is that, you know, every month the folks dealing with key programs, and why for him is a key program, meet with him to explain to him what's going on, what supports the need from him.
and he makes clear his expectations of the team. So that is, again, part of the reason why you're seeing better investment results. With respect to, I forgot the second question.
Where would like
the details, right. Our goal is to provide details on the budget by the around December 15th, you know, which will give you a delineation of all the projects and the timelines around this project. So you should look forward to the details of the lighting as well as the other capital projects around that time.
Okay, thank you for coming again, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Hold on, Chair. Can I take 3 seconds now?
Charlie, quickly, because we're behind.
You missed your time. I believe in return on investment, and I believe in everybody wins. So what I want to offer you is an idea that I've offered before, and I'm not sure it's fully understood, but basically, think it through. If you could return to the person who buys their transportation on Metro a 1% return collectively, so that the person who spends a dollar on Metro today, because everybody else spends a dollar, and 1% of all those dollars goes back to one of those lucky winners, then everybody wins.
Thank you, Charlie. We try to explore that, and the initial response is that it's almost an investment in that category, and therefore there's a different set of rules that apply to investments, which obviously provides significant challenges for us to implement that. But we'll continue to look at it. Thanks.
Next, we're going to have the Metro Access report in all 3 minutes.
I've been in one, two. Just two on average each month. Anyhow, so we had a meeting last month. We talked about customer service experience with the call center. They gave an overview of the call center staff and said there's some good things they've gone through. There's some programs in place for both staff. They've come a long way, but there still needs a lot of work to be done in that respect. And I think both parties agree in terms of customers and the call and Metro Access staff in that respect. The other major piece that was discussed was the route trip insertion process, and that was a very fruitful and active discussion. It's something that's going to be ongoing, and it's sort of a necessary evil, as staff discussed, but how it's done and when it's done is all about that process. Beyond that, that's about it. Right. Any other questions to add to that? Tom?
No questions.
Now on the report for the last round. Brian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also keeping it very brief, I would recommend that everyone go to the minutes that were provided to us by Metro staff, which are very thorough and also very very helpful. Although I think we had some motions that were carried last month, and I don't see those listed in the minutes. It might be helpful to have those there so we can, maybe keep track of that. But maybe it's in the work plan. I'm going to double check that. In any case, we had a number of very substantive discussions, both during the public comment section as well as during our topical conversations. During the public comment, we had issues that we discussed related to the imminent implementation of the new Metro Access identification cards to allow for entry through the regular fare gates or using the ADA gate which will be a great assistance to many of us. Sorry to let Audrey not excited about it. particularly one case we had a discussion about the judiciary square gate that is something that not only is it the subject of low lighting and a little bit of a safety concern, you know, because of the proximity to the track, and so it'll be a very welcome thing, at least from the perspective of easy access to the system once those cards are in place. I think they're looking at a January rollout unless that's changed. We talked a little bit about dwell times on the trains and how we seem to be observing that that the trains are not necessarily spending as much time at the station with doors open as they could be, particularly for passengers with disabilities. It's proven to be a challenge for us to get on and off the trains in the time allotted to us. That seems to be an issue that requires a bit of a return to the standard operating procedures, make sure that we're following those and not trying to make up time during some of those slow sections of the tracks by not giving people enough time to get on and off the trains. And again, I think referring back to what Dr. Roser said about one possible opportunity that the slightly shortened or less trained will afford us is an opportunity for greater dwell times. Another two topic areas were the bus stop and the MGM Grand, and how that is opening up in time for the opening of the facility itself, the casino and hotel, this month. And we're excited about the bus line, so it'll take people all the way from Alexandria over to National Harbor, so they can lose the money in National Harbor instead of in Alexandria. as an Alexandria resident, I have experience about that. so there were no issues with respect to that. But am I out of time, Adam?
Yeah.
And then thank you, Tyler. And then finally, we had another report on the emergency exercise conversation with the Council of Governors. Governance. That was also very substantive. More reflections on the need for conversation across jurisdictions and with each other. We're going to, one final thing I'll say about that, we're going to invite the General Counsel of Metro to come see us and talk to us about the waiver issue. Thank you, Andrew.
Okay. We have two administrative announcements.
Yes, Ms. Chair and committee, want to just remind members about the Metro Access Appeals Training. Every member needs to take this training and to serve on an appeal during their tenure. We have the training coming up on Thursday, December the 8th. It will be in the evening, and we had it in the evening this time because we recognized we got quite a few members at work, and we weren't interested in impacting their work schedule, but it will be this Thursday. So I will forward the email again tonight, and members need to make sure that they RSVP for the training. The other piece I wanted to let members know, this is a good piece, and this is something we want to congratulate one of our members. Doris Ray, our very own Doris Ray, has been recognized for the Martha Glennon Disability and Inclusion and Equity Award. And that's coming up. She'll be recognized for that award on Monday, December the 12th at 7 p.m. at Fairfax County Government Center. So I wanted you all to let you know that she was selected, and she was selected for her work demonstrating a strong commitment to full inclusion in Fairfax County area. So congratulations.
Madam Chair, can I just add one thing? As a chairman of the Fairfax County Disability Services Board, it was my honor to have Doris recommended and accepted by my board member for the chair. Please feel free to come join us on next Monday. Thank you.
Is Mr. White here? Thank you.
No.
He's here, not.
Yeah, he is. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr.
White? Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Mayor,
customers, and you know where.
To my knowledge, we don't currently have a designated spot, but we should be able to, and I discussed this with staff a couple of weeks ago, it appears that we will be able to drop off in front of the building, but I'm going to research that and we'll provide the exact detail back to the committee on that.
You can always go to Alexandria to spend.
Yes. Yes, there's also an accessible bus stop that can be utilized, but it's my understanding at this stage that we would be able to drop off in the front of the building or at an alternate location per request, but we will look at it in further detail and advise if there are any changes to that process. But as it stands now, from what I've seen, we should be able to drop off at or pick up at the location.
Pick up in front of the casino?
That is my understanding as it stands now. Unless we are restricted by the hotel, which I have not seen as of yet, we should be able to drop off and pick up in front.
Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Ms. Rush?
Yes.
Mr. Kent?
Yes.
I did want to tell you very quickly that any time that a customer has an issue with their job where Metro Access is concerned, Metro does have an ombudsman. Mr. Schaefer is here in the room, and he is our ombudsman, and he helps with those types of things. And he asked me to relay that if you ever call customer service and you have an escalated complaint like that, that it's very important that you tell them that it is an ADA-related complaint if you want it to find its way to him. So just extra little bit of assistance here, just in the event that you all need that from the ombudsman. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Can I get a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Good night, everybody.